Okay, everybody, welcome to our 3-4-15 March 4th, 2015 call. We're very excited for today's call. We've got a special guest that we're going to get to here in just a minute. But before we do that, we just wanted to buzz through just a few quick announcements for the group. First and foremost, a big thank you to all of you who attended NIS Live 2016. I haven't made it through every event evaluation forum, but I've been reading through quite a few of them. We're excited. We're very excited. We had, I literally, of all the forums I made it through, everyone said, "Are you coming to NIS Live 2016? And they all said yes. And I had just one that says, "Not sure yet, need to get the time off." So for the most part, it was 100% throughput on that, which really makes us excited. We sounds like we did a few things right. And then on top of that, probably most importantly, we got just a bunch of great feedback from everybody on things that they would like to see. And I would encourage you guys, if you weren't able to do an evaluation form or forgot to hand it in, just reply to the email from today's call and just either give your overall impression of the event, what you liked, you know, what you thought was great, any key connections you made. We lean on you guys in this group to, you know, help us out with some of that. And then, as always, we want you to give that candid feedback as to what you'd like to see improved. So in terms of the calendar coming up, if you guys can just save the dates, March 25th, we'll actually, we don't have a location. We'll just see how many want to come live and how many want to go through a live cast. We're going to test that technology, whether we're at the Hilton Garden Inn or whether we're just here out of our conference room. We'll see how that goes, and we may be able to just stream that live as well. So we'll follow up with you on that once I work with John on that technology. But definitely want to take advantage of that on some of your files, and you can see in the body of the email, you know, some of the bullets there of what we're going to be able to do while we're there. And then in April, I already bounced this off of Bill and Allison Mancaro just to make sure we weren't rocking the boat. You know, we were going to, anyway, we're going to do 2 days prior to Paper Source. It is a Tuesday and Wednesday. So if some of you guys, you know, we're going to do some fun stuff, you know, for people that are able to come as a group that want to be there. And if it's just, you know, a handful of us, great. If it's more of us, great. But we'd like to do some fun stuff together. As a group, we'll be doing, there's a group up there that wants to do one of our fast start workshops, wants us to put that on. So we'll market that and let people know on the Tuesday, Wednesday. And then one of the evenings there, we'll, you know, we'll do something fun and, you know, go out to dinner or do something as a group. So, and then for those that want to stick around, you know, obviously you're more than welcome to, you know, attend Paper Source. We'll be there. If you'd already planned on doing that, you know, that'd be outstanding. So we're going to be there and we're going to exhibit there. I think we had 6 new members as a result of our exhibiting there in the fall. And so we hope that it'll be the same there as we go here in just less than 60 days. So just a couple things to put on your calendar. So again, that's April 28th and 29th. And Aaron, are you on? Let me just unmute you and then just talk briefly. I know we had, I think, 7 or 8 of the pools that are, you there?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead. Just talk briefly. I know at least 7 or 8 of those pools that we had out of our block, out of the summit we filled, but just talk briefly about that opportunity.
Yeah. So we have, there are 7 pools that are accounted for, and they actually, so we need to fund out 3 more pools for sure. And then I was told by the hedge fund we're buying from that they carved some additional pools out in addition to if we had extra people that wanted to partake in that same funding round to get on that. So that we need to, so please send me an email to Aaron, Aaron, at capstonefundinggroup.com. Or if you can give me a call as well at 602-228-1314. That would be appreciated if you're interested in doing that. Same composition as far as These blended pools with 40 to 50% of these non-performing junior lien pools have a performing senior, and then the rest of it is a mix of not reported and delinquent status as far as a senior goes. 720 to 760 as far as UPB, pricing under 14 cents, and there are 100K investment pools. We've been asked to close it out by, at the very latest, the 13th of next week. They have done BK checks and have current credit reports. So if that's something you're interested in, please let us know, and so we can get this next funding closed out. That'd be great. That's it for me.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. And, you know, talking about those, some of you have seen the Reno case study that I shared about, you know, letting the first do all the work. That was one that came out of the blends. And I know we've got a hotline submission today where there's a short sale involved, and we've got two of those in our portfolio right now. So I'm very excited to get to that here in just a minute. But before we do that, I just wanted to go ahead and introduce our special guest expert today. Let me just make sure I've got him off mute. You there, Bill? Can you hear me?
I am here. How do I sound? Do I sound clear?
Yep, you're good. You're good. So let me just tell the group real quick about, you know, I want to say almost 2.5 years now up in Las Vegas at an event. I had a chance, and I hadn't yet taken the plunge into the world of non-performing junior liens at the time. I think you might remember that. But I had asked quite a few different questions. We were just there in the little exhibit hall and found out that this was something Bill was, the master of his craft, even at that time, working, you know, almost exclusively, if I remember right, within the niche. But just, again, blistered him with a bunch of questions, very patient, giving guy, and left an impression on me. And we've kind of seen each other here and there at different events and kind of at a distance. And I have the pleasure of following him on Facebook and getting to know a little bit about what he's about and some of his interests. But one of the things that I was excited about to have Bill, when I reached out to him to have him come, get on the call, not only does Bill work exclusively in the non-performing junior lien niche, but he actually manages, obviously, his own portfolio that he does for his own account. He believes in what he's doing. He's building his own portfolio. But then he also does it for some outside clients as well. And it's exclusively the seconds. Is that right, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely, Travis.
Yeah, and he's currently, at any given time, he's, you know, working things out and handing them, you know, back to the client. And currently, I know we talked just this past week, and you were up over 110 loans that you were managing. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But why don't we do this, Bill? Why don't you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about you personally, because I want to get to know you. And then tell us a little bit about, you know, your business, how it's structured, and actually save the structured part for after that. But just, I'd like to hear the story after you tell us a little bit about you personally. Tell us how you got into the non-performing junior lien space, and then we'll go from there.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on the call, Travis. I'm looking forward to it. I love this space. I love investing in junior liens. I love everything that we do on a day-to-day basis. Very excited about this business, very passionate about it. It's in the process of changing my life right now, and it's really, really good stuff. Again, my name is Bill McCafferty. I'm 40 years old. I live in Pennsylvania.
Got you by 2 years, buddy. I got you by 2 years. Sorry, keep going.
But hit the big 4-0 this year. So I have two kids. I've been married for 17 years. I have an 11 and 9-year-old. They are my why. It's why I do what I do every day. But back in 2006, I was working full-time at a school taking care of athletic fields, and just wanted something more out of life. I wanted to pursue some more stuff. So I started getting involved in some real estate, buying some properties to hold, trying out some rehabs, and, you know, just kind of diving in full tilt back in 2006. You know, started buying a lot of stuff in 07 and 08. In 2008, I also came across some investors that were investing in delinquent second mortgages. Everybody thought they were crazy. They were actually one of the biggest funds in the business right now. That is PPR, Partners for Payment Relief, which I am a PPR student. Dave Van Horn is my mentor. So back in 2008, I just kind of saw what these guys were up to. They were in some local investment groups that I went to. So I just, you know, started seeing what they were doing. They had their mentor speak one night at a group back in 2008. And it's the first time that I really heard exactly what they do. Really opened my mind up. At that time, I actively invested in their fund. I also bought my first performing asset, and I also bought my first non-performing asset.
So this really was looked, this was 2008, early, late?
Yeah, late 2008, early 2009, right around.
Okay, very good. Very good.
Yeah, very exciting stuff. And then, you know, I just kind of slowly but gradually just started learning, networking. There was a whole group of us that were kind of in southeastern Pennsylvania that were, you know, diving into it pretty heavily. I got real good at, you know, keeping things organized and managing the file. So in 2011, I actually left the school full time and went into the real estate world full time. So at that time, it was a, you know, a big thing going on here with me and my family. It was a big chance that I was taking, but I just saw the opportunity and I had to go with it. So I've been on my own since 2011. I've been through some partnerships. Actually, right now I am completely on my own. I have two companies. People's Debt Relief Solutions is my portfolio, which is made up of performing seconds, non-performing seconds. I have a performing first. I have an REO, but mostly seconds. And I have another company, People's Mortgage Relief. And what People's Mortgage Relief does is I'm an asset manager. I'm not a servicer. I don't have license. I don't have the bonds to collect the debt. I actually just manage the asset. That company manages a little over 100 delinquent seconds. I have about 15 to 20 active clients, note buyers throughout the country, and I manage their assets on a daily basis. So right now, it's, you know, it's between my assets and my clients. You know, it's probably a little over 110 non-performing seconds. So that is kind of where I'm at, and that is what I do.
Oh, very cool. I appreciate you sharing that backstory a little bit. Tell me just, you know, because you made that transition, you know, from the fix and flip and the buy and holds, and, you know, as you got into it and you heard Dave Van Horn and a lot of these people talking about these non-performing seconds, what really grabbed your attention, right? What was kind of that, you know, I know for a lot of people, it's like, I know for me, there's times where I'm like, wow, this is just different compared to how I got started in the investing side, you know, and I'm learning every day. I'm a sponge for more information. I know we've bounced different scenarios off each other, but what would you say are some of the, you know, one or two top reasons that you're attracted to non-performing junior liens versus other asset classes?
I mean, number one is the power of them. You know, it takes you a little while to realize how powerful they are, but, you know, as a lien holder, it's very powerful. People come to you, you make decisions, you kind of control things. Whereas as a house investor, there's a lot of other factors that other people were making the decisions on. And I had to go to them for the decisions. And, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of those people that were making decisions didn't really care what would happen to you. So you found out, the hard way that, you know, first position lenders, all they wanted were their mortgage payments. You know, I like the power of the note. I always say, you know, the power of the note. That's number one. Number two is always one of the computer-based business.
You kind of cut out on that one. I don't know if you could just tell us number two again. I heard the end of number one. Maybe just talk real quick on number two again.
Yeah, my apologies. Number two is, like I said, when I got into this business, real estate, I wanted a phone computer-based business. And that is not what I got with rehab and rental. So when I started discovering these non-performing liens and then I could actually work them, from an office anywhere, and I could manage a loan, across the country from an office on the other side of the country, just those two things alone are so powerful. It's really what I really like about it. It's really easy to scale. Managing 100 loans, is it a lot? It is a lot. I know people that manage 200-300. All about this, having systems in place and scaling it. And this was a business that was, really allowed me to do that with just.
Well, that's exciting. I would say, personally, I would say ditto, ditto, and ditto. That's what got me excited. And it took me a while to really realize, kind of understand the risks as well. And when I say it took me a while, meaning I'm still in that mode. Do you know what I mean? And I'm sure some of the people on the call can relate. You're constantly understanding more of those risks and how to minimize them as much as possible. So I'm going to go ahead and I want to jump right into something because let me just see if I can remember which one's Gary. This is a guess, but I'm going to go with a 760 number. Unmute Gary. You there, Gary? Can you hear me, Gary?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. So just before we jump into this email that Gary forwarded to the Asset Management and Workout Hotline here, I wanted to just really talk about, because I relate a lot to this particular, we'll call it a case study here, but when we first did our first buy, we were fortunate on that first buy that, we said, hey, we only want stuff, we paid a premium for it, but we only want stuff with a performing first mortgage in front of the non-performing second. And within 3 months after that, when we were ready to buy again, we were informed, right, that the note seller no longer did that they were selling only blended pools. And so this has been a good year, maybe even 14, 15 months that, and then we kind of watched as we checked in with everybody else to see if we could do some of that. We were finding that more of them were going to a blend. There were still a few that were allowing some cherry picking. But that number seems to be fewer and fewer and fewer. And I've just seen a couple of pools come across my desk recently and they're all blended. And so this particular scenario where you've got a defaulted first and a defaulted second, right? That's kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, just on handling these assets, and typically something's going to happen. But Gary, why don't we just go to your specific case study and maybe just give us real briefly, just give us kind of an overview, where the property's at, who reached out to you initially to let you know. I mean, you had this recorded junior lien, and then I know Bill's got a few ideas, and from our office, you were getting a few different suggestions, but, talk about that a little bit. It sounds like you got about 6750 into this loan. Where's it at again?
This particular property is in Auburndale, Florida. Not quite sure what part of Florida. It came to me that that a short sale was active with the first, and they're in escrow. And the sales price came in at 143, where the fair market value is at 185. And so the first was originally 294, was willing to downgrade it to 126. And in the HUD, if you read it, it included $5,000 for the second. And the second was face value of the note was $50,000.
So they've gone with the standard 10%. Yep. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
Yep. Right. So the first insisted on going to an online auction to get a price for it. So they went with an online auction that would charge $7,000 for the privilege. So if you look at the sales contract, it was the 143 winning bid plus $7,000 for the auction company. And then on the HUD one, there's another $8,500 for the buyer and seller's agent to split. So between the agent and the auction, that's another $15,000, $16,000 or 10%. So that was, and then I get luckily $5,000. What a nice offer. So they wanted me to see if that was okay. And I basically replied, that's way too low. That's unacceptable.
Okay.
Go ahead. That's where it stands right now. I got that last night. So that's where it stands.
Very good. So I've got this HUD up in front of me. And I know I would forward this along to Bill as well. Bill, tell us some of your initial thoughts here, because we had forwarded a few answers over to Gary and a couple of places that you'd immediately focus in on. But we got some different things here. Go ahead.
Absolutely. This is how we're handling short sales. I'm just going to talk in general, and then we'll gear it right towards Gary's specific short sale. If the first is getting a full payoff and there's not enough for us to take there, we can then start trying to take some of the commission from the realtors and, bump some money out of, the seller. You can get money anywhere. Once the first accepts a short sale, they're going to dictate that at one. They're going to give the realtors the 6%. In this particular one, they're the ones that, put it on that auction site. You're not going to be able to go pierce their commission, and you're not going to be able to go pierce that amount on the auction site. What we're doing and how we're getting away with this is, you're basically getting up to 10% of what you owed on your second, and the most that I've seen is $8,500. I do know they will go up to $8,500. A lot of them were landing around that 6,000 mark. So this is a nice little nugget right here for everybody. This is how we're doing it. In order for us to accept that short sale, somebody needs to pay my loan balance, whatever money. So this particular deal, I think you were saying you were in and around $7,000.
Hey, Bill, can you do me a quick favor? I'm not sure. Maybe it's just the internet. Are you connected through the phone or through the internet?
Does this sound better? Does this sound
better?
Yeah,
that's actually better.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're on your phone?
Yeah, I'm on my phone and I was on the speaker, so it definitely could have got a little rap.
Okay, yeah. If you can just, literally just the part where you said, hey, here's a nugget for everybody, and then just pick up from there, because after that it kind of...
Absolutely. This is how we're going about it, because you really can't go after any commission, and there's really no way to have money come off the HUD one. So behind the scenes, whoever's controlling this thing, it needs to be said directly to the owner of the property. But if there's a realtor or whoever that's handling it and you actually have a direct contact, the bottom line is if they owe you $50,000 on a loan balance, in order for me to accept a $5,000 short sale, somebody needs to pay my loan balance down by whatever amount I want it to be. So, if you want to get $15,000 out of this and they're only going to give you $5,000 on the HUD one, somebody needs to pay my $50,000 loan balance down to $40,000 before I accept that. And now it puts it back on them. You're not dictating anything off the HUD one. You're not telling the homeowner he has to pay the money. Could be a combination of the homeowner, family members, the realtors, the auction site. $10,000 is probably a lot. We're throwing out the amount around $4,000 to $8,000 is what we're throwing out. So, we're getting the $6,000 to $8,500 off the HUD one. And then we're basically telling the homeowner, before we can accept that, you need to pay your loan balance down by a certain amount of money. All it is the way you're phrasing it, and it's all legal.
Okay, so just so I make sure I'm understanding that, you're letting the HUD, right? Because that first mortgage lender's already approved the HUD, right?
Yep.
You're not wanting to monkey with any of the numbers on HUD. You're basically looking to find some way to go. And even when you hear the word off HUD, people are like, oh, you know, now we're getting into that gray area. And you're like, well, hey, why are we even going gray area? Right? Let's just go to something real simple. And you're saying, somehow, some way, I need to have the loan balance paid from this down to this, and then I'll take what's on the HUD, is what you're saying.
I'll write that. Yep, I can write that in a one-page agreement, you know, pay down the loan balance by $5,000. And when the loan balance is this amount, we will accept a short sale of this amount. Nothing illegal about it. It's all clean.
Guys, go ahead. Gary, ask a question. If anyone's got a follow-up question, just once Gary's done, start unmute yourself.
Now, on this particular, you know, on this particular deal, you might have to backtrack a little bit, but now going into this stuff next time, you're going to know right up front that when people start talking short sales, you're going to say, hey, I will work with you, but somebody's going to need to pay my loan balance down. I'll check with management on what that amount needs to be to pay it down. Like you said, you're going to have them all start talking to HUD 1 and all that stuff, but we're not doing anything with the HUD 1.
So if you're not doing anything on the HUD 1, does that mean you're also doing it outside of their escrow, the private conversation on the side?
Yeah, like the closing didn't even actually happen yet. So like right now, that homeowner still owes me that debt. So there's nowhere in any documents that says that homeowner can't pay on my mortgage right now.
Yeah, so to memorialize what you, let's say they agree to pay down your mortgage before you're able to sign off on the HUD 1 and the $5,000. Are you entering a separate agreement with the homeowner, or is part of the closing agent handling that one as well?
You don't even need to do an agreement. I mean, you know, they most likely homeowner is going to want to see that on a piece of paper. They're going to want to see you sign that.
Right, but is that that's outside of the escrow agent, right?
Because it has nothing to do with that. It's way before the actual closing of the transaction. Like right now, that homeowner still owes him on that second mortgage. So it becomes a game of leverage, like we deal with all the time. You know, you kind of put it in their lap. You know, the fault there is, you know, on a scenario like that, you know, a realtor could come out of pocket $1,500 behind the scenes if they really want this transaction to happen. A homeowner could get money still from a family or friend. Like, I push family and friend all the time. So, you know, could you get a family member to lend you $5,000 to get you out of this whole mess? Is basically what you're telling them. Just a way around. You're going to have a little tough time trying to get anybody's commission right now. It's just once the first starts dictating, you know, it's tough to get any. It's tough to negotiate that at all.
Even outside, you're basically saying, hey, somebody, I've got to receive a payment down on this loan balance. And I like that. So I guess my question is, are you in that, if you wanted to do an agreement outside with this homeowner, where the agent's privy to whoever can see that, you know, that wants to make this deal go through, are you saying then that it's like, okay, it'll be down to this amount plus what's been agreed upon, right, by the first mortgage lender already on HUD? And then are you saying you're forgiving the rest to close this out and they're not pursuing a deficiency judgment? Is that some of the stuff you're throwing in there as well?
You're going to sign off on all that with the short sale in general.
Perfect.
Like with all the deficiency and stuff. So all you're doing, and you want to do it directly with the borrower. I mean, if somebody's helping the borrower, like a realtor, that's fine, but it's still the agreements with the borrower. Because that's who owes you the money. I don't care where the money comes from, but the agreements with the borrower. You don't want to have a side agreement with a realtor or anybody else. So it's exactly what you said. You know, pay the loan balance down by $5,000. Your balance would be this. We'd be willing to accept
First Mortgage is allowing us to get off the HUD one for the short sale. You know?
Okay.
Looking to the point.
So this is the cleanest. Go ahead, Gary.
No, I was thinking that I could do that on the side. The escrow agent doesn't need to even know. Or they could, but it doesn't matter. It's between me and the borrower. And that's where I would also look at the credit report for the borrower and say, okay, how much money do you have to do something on the side?
But even like that, even if they, you know, you might not see anything on the credit report. I mean, something like that, if they really want to get it done, somebody will come off the money, a family member. You know, even in that scenario, even if both sides came off $1,000 and they got $5,500, you know, and the homeowner came up with $3,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, you're not getting anybody to pay you outside this transaction. All you're asking is somebody to pay your loan down before you sign off on a short sale.
Okay.
Yeah, I love how clean that is. I really do. So in this case, Bill, you're looking at this and you're saying, okay, they've come back, offered him five. He's $6,750 in. Where is it? I mean, obviously, you never get what you don't ask for, right? So, I mean, what's asking too much? What's kind of a ballpark number that you've seen in terms of start higher?
Yeah. Whoever's running the short sale, I would ask for more than $5,000. Even if they can only get you to six, maybe they can't get you any more than five, but you want to know the reason why you're getting five. There's got to be a percentage. They may have a guideline that they have to follow. That's the reality. Most of them have guidelines that they have to follow. Once they accept a short sale, they're only allowed to get so much to the second, and, you know, there's a third, maybe a little bit to a third. So I would ask for more there, and I don't know, on like something like this, throw $5,000 out or $8,000. Now you want to make it, number one, you got to make it realistic to get the deal done for yourself too. I mean, even on this deal, you'd be happy to get your money out. I mean, if they come to the table with $3,000 to get all your money out, you'd be happy. That's where you get with these short sales. You got to get your money out. If you make a profit, that's great, but you got to just get your money out. That's where I would go with it, you know, see if they can get you more and, you know, go back to that bar or whoever's running the short sale and say, hey, here's the deal.
Yeah, okay, I got it. I have the borrower's phone number, so I can call him.
It's just like you said, and, you know, you're going to have all these people that will start screaming about the HUD-1, but you're not doing anything on the HUD-1, and you're totally outside the transaction right now.
Okay.
So if we were in a live environment, I would ask everybody, as you know me, and I always do, how many of you think that is a nugget, just like Bill called that a nugget? That's just a different way than I've heard it phrased, and, you know, just where it's clean. So I think that's really solid. I'd heard of, you know, hey, I don't care who pays me. Someone's got to pay me. And it's, you know, it's happening outside of escrow, but it wasn't, hey, you know, go ahead and I need to have my loan balance paid down by X amount prep for this deal to go through. So that's really good. Any follow-up questions, guys, besides, well, I've got Gary and myself on here, just star to unmute or just unmute if you're on the computer. Any follow-up questions to that? Okay. Sounds like you covered it very clearly. Gary, while I've still got you, I know you had submitted. Did you want to go through and talk about your other submission you had there as well?
Yeah, this is a different one. This is a first, but there's things that could be learned from this anyways. Is I bought a first. There's a property in near Barstow, California, that is only worth $90,000, but the original note is worth $180,000. And I bought that one for $45,000, and so I need to foreclose on that. And I'm into it for $50,000. I'll be into it for $50,000. Probably it's worth $90,000 fixed up, but I'll probably get $70,000 on an auction. So there was different ideas of how I would price what the minimum bid would be. And the strategy, I could sell and get $70,000 and net $20,000, or I could price it higher and not get any winning bids and get it REO and then sell it on a note and get creative with the 10B2 and trying to create a yield out of it. And the thought was that I'm 50 into it. If I get 10% down, which would be 5,000, then the balance would be 45, and then sell it the note, the rest of the house, for about $85,000 note at 7%. It turned out to be a 16% yield, and that seemed like it really is not so much a question, but there was learning opportunities here on what kind of exit strategies, and there were a number of them. The simplest was just to sell it at auction, but the other was to sell it, carry it back, and create all sorts of notes and two notes or a wrap or however you want it, two notes simultaneously, where the first, you can sell out the first to get your money back, and the second doesn't start till the first one's paid off. And then, so I would have nothing in the deal, and then would have 20 years of payments left over after that at least 16% yield. No, actually nothing, because I had nothing left in it. Who is it? Matt Kelly told me about that one. It's just, don't sell it, just, and don't even rent it. Or if you want to be a landlord 2 hours away, just make it an REO and sell it on a note. So it's like a backdoor way of it's a backdoor way of creating notes. Just foreclose if you can't get them to start paying on it.
Well, I really like that, and I actually think, Gary, what would be really good on that particular deal, if we could just get the numbers. I know I was looking at the email, and I didn't see you attach that, and I just realized you said if you want at the end of your email, and I should have replied back to get that. But I would like us to have a look at that. We've got one we're working on doing the exact same thing. It's in Ohio, but it's a land contract. So I definitely would like to use that and talk about that with a group, because I think that would be very beneficial. And I know several of you, we've introduced you to some people that have some non-performing firsts available. And this same strategy is very relevant to that. But let's definitely write that up and just kind of look at your different angles there and share that with the group, if you don't mind. Would love to have that. We'll do the same with ours. So very good. Any thoughts on that at all, Bill? I know he just kind of presented it.
That's a lot of good problems to have right there. There's
a lot of good options.
I'm right there with you, man. I mean, do you just take it to sale and you bid it so you make 15 or 20 grand and you get your money out and you're looking for something else, or, depending on what type of investor you are, there's a lot of opportunity there. I mean, I agree. Take it back as an REO and then sell or finance it. Get a down payment on it. If it needs a little bit of fix-up work, find somebody that wants to be creative with you that can do a little bit of fix-up. Definitely don't rent it out, but just sell or finance it.
It's 2 hours away. I don't want to be a landlord.
Nah, not at all.
It's a few very interesting California properties that I found that was less than $100,000.
So the deal. It's like, do you take the 15 or 20 profit now, or do you maybe just let the market determine that for you? Price it at what you'd be comfortable to get bought out at, and if you end up with it, you end up with it.
Exactly.
Great problem to have, man. Congratulations on a good deal.
Thanks.
So let's do this, because that kind of leads me to a question you and I were having earlier, Bill. The conversation of these sales and how aggressive to be. I know we had a good presentation by Rand Johnson there at Trustee Corps, at our event, and we're going back and forth a lot with Matt Kelly as well. But one of these things where, we've had, I want to just in my first year, when we first got going, I really feel like one of the biggest mistakes I made was just not being aggressive enough, right? Like just really, and people will string you along, they do. But now as we figure that out, I want to be more aggressive. But then I know there's that fine line between, the balancing act between, when are they a possible candidate for bankruptcy, which really kind of stretches it out. But at the same time, maybe just talk a little bit. Could you just maybe give us some insight as to when you're looking over a file, right? And I know you do this for people, and you're going to be doing, you know, a little chunk of some assets for me personally. But talk about that for a minute. You know, where do you? I think that's a big deal. And for we got kind of a mix within the group. We have the bulk of people are working them out on their own. Others are using a third party to do that, you know, either like yourself or a Madison Management or something, but even managing them, you know, like talk to us about that. What's some of your parameters for that?
Nah, absolutely. You know, this distressed second mortgage space it's all about a numbers game. You know, the more that you can buy, the more you spread that risk out, the more chance you have of the big home runs happening. You know, the statistics over the last 5 years tell us that, you know, if we handle these a certain way, a certain amount of them turn out this way, some turn out this way, some turn out this way. But what I learned from an early stage in this game is I want to be aggressive with legal. You know, with me reaching out to the homeowner, I keep it real clean. I'm real good with the people. So when I say I get aggressive, all I mean is I'm sending out a demand letter in the first month, and in the second month, I'm opening that foreclosure file up, and then from there, I'm pushing it along until I can get a sale date set. I buy these distressed seconds. You know, we all want the perfect first mortgage, so that makes it a lot easier to determine where you want to go with this. But I've also found out, even when the first is banged up, if I press these homeowners from the second position, it helps them make a decision with the first mortgage also. Sometimes we like that decision, sometimes we don't. I feel like investors a lot with this space try to figure out their own exit strategies and, you know, want something from that borrower that they might not have. How I get my results are, I basically get a sheriff sale set, and I make that homeowner make a decision. They're going to either pay me, give me the keys, or file bankruptcy. I try not to fear any bankruptcy, even on the stuff that's upside down. It is a little more of the stuff that's upside down that the people, you know, do file bankruptcy, you know, file Chapter 13, but it's still a numbers game. It becomes a game of chicken. So I get that. Once I have that sheriff sale date set, I like that because it now makes that homeowner have a deadline to make a decision. So when I was talking to Travis earlier this week, I was just explaining to him, you know, how my month looks this month and next month. I have about 8 sales this month, and I have about 8 sales next month. I used to get very nervous when I had that many, but I just know that it's a numbers game. Some are going to pay me. Some are going to file bankruptcy, and we'll deal with it. We're going to foreclose on some. We're going to get the houses. I still get workouts done on the other side of the foreclosure sale. So from my end, I just keep pressing for that homeowner to make a decision. As a note buyer, you can step back and not force a hand at any time. It's your asset. You can do whatever you want. I personally like to buy them and force a hand. I want to know if they're going to work out or not. And that's where pricing starts coming in. You know, I buy a lot of stuff that is banged up on the first, but I get it real cheap. And, you know, if I get them cheap enough and I buy 3 and only 1 work out, you know what? The numbers still tell me that it's working out good. So, you know, it just becomes more of that pricing when you're looking at stuff that's, you know, banged up with the first. But, you know, getting these sale dates set, like I said, it just becomes a deadline for these homeowners to make a decision. And I watch it like clockwork all the time. They come out a week or two and they want to, you know, get into a payment plan, or they want to figure out how they can pay it off. And it's, you know, it's like, you know, where were you the last 2 years when I was trying to get in touch with you? You know, I appreciate all the information, but I was scared. I was ignoring you. You know, I didn't know that you could do this. So you get all that stuff. So, you know, from my end, I just treat this like a business. I have a system. I plug all my files into it. The letters are all the same. My touches are all the same. I start legal. I like to express this to everybody on the call. It's, you know, it's always about your portfolio too. So You know, if your portfolio allows you to, you know, press the legal, you know, you want to do that. You know, I'd rather buy a few less notes to have the money to handle legal on the notes that I'm going forward with than buying a bunch of notes and not having any legal money. I'm a firm believer that we're buying banged up debt that no one's paid on for, you know, 3 to 5 years. You know, you're going to spend, you know, a few thousand bucks to get them to start paying. You're still buying it at a great discount. You know, legal is our number one tool. It's what creates our leverage. And I'm a firm believer that these homeowners go through a year or two of going down the foreclosure path. It lays a real nice foundation down for the workout that you're going to move forward with. You know, it was a big, big process for them. They put some money into it. It was a real big deal for them. You helped them solve a big problem. So that's my thought on legal. It's very powerful. It's mandatory. I mean, I know some investors that just buy delinquent seconds, don't even reach out, just start legal, let the homeowner come to them when they're ready. You know, everybody goes about it different.
Well, I like appreciate
to go. And I like, you know, I like to go all angles at once. As long as that legal's moving behind the scenes, I know the deal is going to come to a head at some time, even if it's 12 or 24 months out. Yeah, once again, it's a very easy space to get discouraged in. It takes me about 6 to 24 months to get deals done.
Well, you talked earlier, it's a game of patience, right? And I know I've talked to a lot of people, specifically in the group and then at our event recently. You know, this is not a sprint. It's more of a marathon, right? But I appreciate one of the things you said there, Bill. And I'd like you to just comment on this briefly. But we tell people, only because this is kind of what we've seen, and I think the number's a little bit padded, but I'm glad it's padded. And we tell people to allow for about a 25% expense factor above and beyond your investment. Like, that should be budgeted in. And I know we've come in lower than that, based on where the down payment money kind of covers itself. You know, it starts covering some of those costs, so it self-funds, you know, relatively quickly, the portfolio does. But if you were letting someone know, hey, I'm going to go buy a $100,000 pool, I'm going to pay $100,000 for it, you know, what should I expect in terms of some sort of a rule of thumb budget number?
I actually have it in my contract for my clients, just to be aware of it. I always say, hey, you should estimate about $3,000 per file for legal. You know, you may spend more than that. You know, you might only spend $75 on a demand letter. You know, $3,000 could be spread out over 18 months. But, you know, I always say I like to have about $3,000 in reserves per file for legal. Now, you know, you got to be smart as an investor and understand that, you know, some of the billing will come month to month. Some attorneys bill at the end. So, you know, that's a number I like to kind of throw out and that I kind of share with everybody.
No, I appreciate that. That's actually even a little more cushion in that number than even what I was using at the 25%. So, because if you're typically getting 10 assets, sometimes more, you know, you got to figure that number. And I can't tell you, we offered up some hot seat opportunities at our event where people would fill out an application and where they need some individual help. And I sat down with one gentleman and he had bought two non-performing first mortgages. And, you know, just, you know, I could tell that he had his foot on the brake. And the question he asked me is, hey, I'm ready to go, you know, raise some capital and do the, you know, start really growing this. I want to raise some IRA money. I kind of could tell when I asked him that, you know, because really he had connections. He had an REO broker business, been doing it forever, knew people in the community. And I was kind of like, well, why haven't you done it yet? You know, it was just one, that was one of my questions. And come to find out that his belief level in what he was doing was low in terms of the workout, because when I peeled back the layers of the onion with him, come to find out that he had two notes that he had had everything had moved along. They weren't responding. And the bill to start foreclosure on both of those files was about $2,800. And he didn't have the money. You know, so here was, it had stopped his entire business. Do you know what I mean? Like it was, and it was just not budgeting. And I said to him, wow, I don't know anything about the notes, but let's talk about maybe helping you unload those or sell them or kind of resetting, right? Because I could tell that was causing a foot on the brake. And then he later told me that after leaving and coming back and talking with me, said, you're absolutely right. That whole thing has stopped me. And here it was, just from a simple budgeting error, right? That it had given him that froze, and he was just frozen. You know, couldn't talk to anyone about the note business. And here, and these two assets were great assets. He had some money to make, but he couldn't go get that non-performing asset reperforming because he had no money. So I can't stress that enough, you guys. You know, learn from that mistake for sure, but just make sure to budget enough. So, well, guys, real quick, while we've got Bill on the line here, if you guys wouldn't mind, if you got any questions, just star to unmute. If there's any specific question you've got, I found a lot of value out of today and just going through Gary's scenario there and some additional discussions here with Bill. Anyone else have any questions before we wrap up for today? Star to unmute if you've got one. They're usually a lively bunch. Who do we got here? Darren, go ahead, my friend.
Hey, Bill, first, thanks for the information. And and I also just wanted to see your insight on something. I wanted to know if you've had any success on Fannie loans getting more than $6,000 in a short sale or a deed in lieu.
It's kind of what's happening, man. It's that $6,000 up to $8,500, but mostly you're landing around $6,000 for what you just said.
Okay, that's what I thought too. There, because Nation Star was pressing me hard, and they said $6,000, or that's it. We're just going to foreclose on you. And I said, all right, go for it. My note's in New York, and it's going to take them a year. So I just wanted to see if they'd move at all, or if you think they're going to probably stick.
So yeah, and that's kind of why we started doing that little technique with trying to ask them to pay down the loan balances to get some more money out of there.
Okay. And the other question was, have you had any success trying to buy out the first? I've been trying to do that on a couple of notes. I'm not really getting anywhere, but buy out the first in, like, say, a vacant home situation where they're considering foreclosing or maybe they've begun foreclosing?
It's one of the most difficult things to do is to deal with the first mortgage. If it's a big lender, you're better off, like, just putting your money elsewhere, trying to get your money out, trying to figure something else out.
Okay.
They just have too many 9-to-5 people over there, and they don't really have the systems to think outside the box, and it would probably make complete sense for them to sell it to you and get their money and roll, but they wouldn't. You know, if you come across a small investor, you know, a smaller company that might have it, a hedge fund, you might be able to negotiate with, but your big lenders are very, very difficult, man.
Yeah, that's what I found. I was going to ask. That's why I was going to ask. I've had a couple lenders where they offered to sell me a first for like 90 cents on the dollar, and that's okay. But the big lenders, I can't get a hold of anybody. So just curious.
Even when I foreclose on a property from the second position, and I want to have a conversation after I'm the deeded owner, they still won't. They want an authorization from the homeowner still.
Really? After you foreclose?
Yeah. Some do, man. Some will, but most of them won't have a conversation with you. Absolutely.
Wow. Okay. All right. That's good to know. Okay. That's for me.
Bill, what about... Go ahead. I was just had a question about like Ocwen or BSI or some of these bigger servicers that are servicing, you know, for other banks or other hedge funds. You know, have you had any experience working, you know, with Ocwen or a BSI or anything in relation to the first?
When you mean relation in the first, like just actually getting something accomplished?
Exactly. Yeah. So the first is being serviced and sometimes even owned by Ocwen or BSI Financial.
That's still a very similar scenario, man.
Okay. Like, okay.
They're not making decisions over there. They're just, you know, normal people looking for the authorization and are not going to be able to get that creative. I mean, I will tell you that, you know, if somebody could pierce that and figure something out like that, there's a lot of opportunity there, but it's just real hard because they follow so many rules and guidelines that, you know, they're just not going to sell that individually like that.
I have a question.
Go ahead, William.
To get the loan mod, or to find out what the loan mod looks like, or get that from the first, do you have any tricks up your sleeve to get that?
You mean a loan mod, like what the?
Well, to get a copy of the loan mod from the lender, from the first.
You know, how I go about, like, you know, my files is I actually have the homeowner authorization in my financial package. So that's like my main goal, to get into a homeowner's hand so they can get that 6-page financial form back to me. And then I can get whatever I want once I have that in possession. But yeah, I mean, I personally never look for the agreement. I mean, I want to know what the balance is and, you know, what's going on with it, but I don't need to actually see the loan mod or anything. That's just me personally.
Your main deal there, Bill, really is just finding out if the credit report number matches the actual balance, right? Just getting a payoff, really. And once you got that, you're rolling, right?
That's it, man. You could get so lost in the first mortgage space trying to figure out delinquent seconds that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we just can't control or have influence over. And, you know, for the last 6 or 7 years, I've been putting a lot of time and effort into things that you get no results. So you eventually just find out it's better to put your mind elsewhere that's going to make you money than to, you know, spend an hour or two on a phone with a first mortgage and you're getting nowhere. So that's,
yeah,
why we're getting better with these. That's why we're getting a little better with these short sales and trying to get a little more money out. You know, being a little smarter, maybe taking a short payoff up front that doesn't look very exciting, but makes sense for the portfolio. So, you know, just different things like that is what we're doing.
Very cool. Very cool. Gary, did you have another question there before we sign off for the day?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on the working a deal with the homeowner outside the HUD one on the short sale. One objection I could see is, okay, we worked out an agreement, but I pay you. How did you know once I pay you that you're going to go ahead and sign off on the reconveyance? Is there a mechanism there to make sure that once they pay you, you sign off?
I mean, once again, I don't have any problem spelling out what's going to happen. You know, this is what you need to do to pay down your loan balance. When this happens, we'll sign off on the short sale, you know, and any verbiage that they want to hear, you know, you can put down there for them.
So you just use the power of the contract.
Yeah, I've been creating documents and contracts for like the last 7 years. I mean, you're just doing different new things all the time with these homeowners. And as long as it's down on paper and you both sign it.
And it's really that simple, right, Bill? I mean, you're just like, I mean, literally we've done that where it's like, here's what you agree to do. Here's what we agree to do. And we have a deadline by which we're going to do it by. We sign, they sign. And it's just, now it's just, you know, do what you say you were going to do. And, you know, we've had a couple of checks come in a little bit later than they said they were going to send them in, but you know, I mean, at the end of the day, we're still cashing those checks.
Absolutely. You know, my only thing with something like that is always just put an expiration or a null and void date where it doesn't, you know, the agreements, you know, doesn't count, or, you know, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah. Well, very good, guys. Listen, we're excited. I know Bill's going to try and help us as often as he can. He's busy with his portfolio, and we're talking about some other potential deals here where we can, you know, keep him busy and work with us here with the group. But we're excited. You know, we want to continue to bring people who, I guess what excites me most of all is that this is what Bill does every day, right? And I know we've had that conversation. We had talked briefly before and we weren't at the volume we were at now with this group. And, you know, now we've got this need here. And I think there's a win-win here for everybody. So we'll talk more about it. I don't know who Sharp Management is. Someone just tuned in.
Hi,
with a
it's
question.
Marion.
Marion, Sharp Management. Yes. Nice. Go ahead.
I just have a quick question about the short sale. The short sale that you talked about where the first is dictating how much you can get, like $5,000, is that only in the scenario where they are reducing their balance too, or does that also apply when they are in full equity? So would they still have to pay?
Great question.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the first is getting a full payoff, I mean, you can start gouging everybody, realtors, anybody that wants to come up off of money. I'm a firm believer if the first is getting a full payoff, you know, realtors are definitely only getting probably 2% each.
Mm-hmm. 2%, wow.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, 2% each, yeah.
Lucky, you know, it might even be 1.5%. I mean, you know, the deal's going to happen no matter what. I mean, they need you to sign off on it.
And you can do the agreement. I mean, the agreement can just flat out say, you know, you're expecting this amount from the borrower, and that doesn't violate the HUD one or anything like that.
Not at all.
Okay, cool.
So just to restate then, Bill, so I make sure we're all understanding that. So in a scenario
absolutely.
Like Gary's, where the first is taking a big haircut, right? The HUD is pretty much set in stone, right?
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing you say versus when there's a full when they're getting a full payoff plus arrearages and lates and yada yada yada, you know, it's now open season, right? You're going back to everybody saying, well, hey, I need X. So you guys all huddle up and figure this out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's, you know, $50,000 after the first is paid off and you're owed, you know, $80,000 and, you know, everybody took their commission out. Yeah, absolutely. If you're not
perfect.
Happy with that payoff. And at the end of the day, you know, if it's all fair, I want to let everybody get their 3%. You know, I want it to be fair for everybody. I don't want to gouge realtors. I don't want to gouge nobody. But, you know, if it's not fair to me as a second mortgage holder, somebody's got to make it fair. I'm not looking to, you know, beat people down or, you know, them make no money or no commission. I just want it to be fair across the board and everybody win.
Well, just to put you on the spot here for a second, I know everybody's fair is different. You know, I mean, what, like, is there a rule of thumb that you operate from? You know, I know I'm sitting there saying, hey, what's fair? And I'm just looking at if this was one of those throwaway assets that I knew. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Like if I just got my money back where it could carry the portfolio, what it was supposed to just by getting my money, I was kind of hoping that I just wouldn't get wiped out on that asset. Is fair as that in that context? I mean, to me, if I'm anywhere close to doubling my money, I'm like signing the contract. Do you know what
absolutely.
I mean? It's like, yeah.
All day long. Yep, all day long. And, you know, you want to read the situation a little bit. I mean, if you knew a realtor really put a lot of time and energy in and their commission wasn't that big, you know, let them get the full thing. I mean, if somebody's getting I've seen some $15,000 commissions and it's like, you guys really didn't do anything.
Yeah, I hear you.
That's all.
Well, very good, guys. Bill, I really appreciate your time today. I know you're taking time away from the portfolio and hopefully
all
your
good.
Presence here, I'm pretty confident that it will drive additional business your way. So,
cool.
Guys, thanks so much for being on today. And what I'd really challenge you guys to do, we've got great attendance today, and I would challenge you guys to submit, if you give us more than 48 hours, what I'd like to be able to do is to put stuff up on slides so we could present it up for you guys and kind of go through it and you're seeing something on screen versus, you know, just over a call. And we're limited on that by what submissions we have. So we're definitely going to do one webinar a month and one call, but we'd like to mix that in where if we had enough submissions, then we could crank through those on a screen where you're seeing the screen. And just it does take just a little bit of prep time to do that, but we can crank that out. I know the gals in the back there are more than willing to help out. So anyway, thanks so much. And we will talk to you guys here. We'll send out an update information of our next, or the calendar. So sometime in the next 24 hours, we're just gonna submit a calendar out to you guys for the next 60 days. So that's our goal. We're going to work on that. It's on the schedule for this afternoon. So again, reply to our email with any additional questions, and we'll talk to you guys all here shortly again. Thanks. Have a great day.